Hi, everyone, and thank you for joining me on the Abundology podcast. Today, I'm talking with Tiffany Nguyen, and we're talking about one of my favorite topics, which is inner peace and happiness. So Tiffany she is a spiritual life coach, a speaker, and also a pharmacist. So one of the things that she helps clients with is finding inner peace and guiding them along that path, so that they can, you know, go down the path toward inner peace and happiness. So thank you so much for being here today, Tiffany.
Thank you, Renee, for having me today.
So just quickly, how did you get started on your journey toward inner peace?
So it all started very gradually. So I moved to the US alone when I was 16, and it was absolutely terrible.
Alone at 16? Oh my goodness, I can't even imagine.
I would not recommend it. not recommend it. 0 out of 10. And it was very rough, especially when I didn't understand. I didn't know the language or the culture. Everything I know about the U.S. was from like American movie.
Yes, and probably bad TV shows too. Yes.
I didn't have any TV show, so it was only a movie, and it was terribly inaccurate. It was like, oh yeah, the U.S. is just like everybody's nice, friendly, and everybody just party and everything just work out, you know. And it's not like that in reality.
Right.
So it was very terrible. And one of my greatest fears is loneliness. So I thought it was clever, so I was trying to, you know, like cope with it by scheduling like tried to spend time with a lot of people, but it was very terrible when you move to a foreign country and you don't know the language.
Yeah.
You cannot spend time with anybody. Nobody understands you.
Right.
So it was a very terrible experience. After that, a few years later on, I did move on, and you know, life did get better. But you know, during those times, the way I cope with it just get into any relationship, like anybody willing to spend time with me who doesn't know English or doesn't know anything. And most of those relationships weren't good. And then it doesn't take me until, I think this is one of the characteristics of high achiever. It just like, I would cope with it and just move on and just like, don't care about it and just sweep everything under the rug and just focus on those tasks. Like I have to do school, I have to go to work, I have to do all this stuff. So I don't have to think about or feel anything and try to forget it. And it took me much later, like a decade later, when I was in Florida pursuing my doctorate degree, and I was engaged at that time. But just one of those days, just lounging around, preparing for another exam with my best friend, and she was just drop a comment like, "I wish I have a relationship like you. It was so great." And I was looking at her like, "It wasn't that great. I don't know what she's talking about." And then she would stop and she would look at me like, why? And I would brush it off, like, you know, like the first habit, you know, I just brush it off. Oh, I just got cold feet. It's normal, completely normal. And it's one of the great things about friendship is you usually much more honest and open compared to your intimate relationship, because there was no expectation for you to be. There's no image to upkeep. So I opened up with my painful experience about like all these relationships that I get into, even though I didn't want to. And I felt like I was a terrible person and I was just waiting for karma to kick me in the ass, basically, waiting for the other shoe to drop. Because, you know, like, I feel like, you know, that's just what I deserve, you know, like just bad karma and terrible things. And I feel like I have to work very hard and I have to do everything perfectly to just earn whatever happiness it is. Mm. And it's, you know, and it was very frustrating to explain to her that I don't know what's going wrong or what's missing, because I check every box, like, I got a, you know, a bright career prospect. I'm you know, successful in school. I also checked with the stable relationship and everything, but I was miserable. And I don't know what I was missing. And I feel like maybe there's something wrong with me that I couldn't feel happiness anymore. I don't know what it is anymore. Maybe that was just a fairy tale that is possible to be a reality.
But I think a lot of people can relate to that, you know, that they have the relationship, they have the, in the United States, the white picket fence, great job, great career, and there still feels like there's something missing. So I think almost everybody can relate to that.
Yeah. And then at the time, I feel like, man, this is too young to feel this midlife crisis. So I'm like, what is going on? But the one beautiful thing coming out of that conversation was not only I opened up and talk about it, how I feel like I don't deserve any happiness, and I would just trying to make everything perfect just to earn it, you know, earn anything, like other people's affections, other people's approval, just earn it. And my friend, the most beautiful thing is my vulnerability also opened the door for my friend to be vulnerable herself. And she started sharing her past. And she also said like almost the same thing, you know, like got into a terrible relationship and not quite sure she deserved this either. And I was like, what? You know, like, it's funny how we can see other people and especially our friend, like they deserve the best and we cannot see it for ourselves.
For ourselves, yep.
I didn't get to that conclusion right away, but it's, you know, like something working in the back of the mind. It's like a few months later when I was driving along and I had that epiphany that if I swap place with my friend, if she did exactly everything I did, I would never ever even think less of her. It would never cross my mind. So I realized that I was too harsh on myself, and everything I tried before to like forgive myself wasn't true. Like I would just I'm more like suppress and just move on, but I never really forgive myself. It became too much. It became more like I hated myself. So then it was actually an act of self-forgiveness that actually started my whole inner journey. So I would just forgive my action. So I wasn't the same person I was a decade ago. I'm surely not the 16 years old girl as I was anymore. And it started off with self-forgiveness, and the burden really lifted off my shoulder. And after that, I, you know, re-examined my life. I still like medicine, so I completed my degree. I broke off the engagement. And then after that, shortly after that, I tumbled upon my teacher is a Tibetan meditation master, and which is a good timing because I was trying to learn meditation for 3 years and I failed. I just fell asleep. It just wasn't for me. I thought, you know, I was a lost cause. But actually, yeah, I think like once it's called Lao Tzu have a very accurate saying, like when the teacher is ready, I mean, when the student's ready, the teacher
will appear. Yep. And I love that saying. Yep.
It was true. I met him and things start clicking and start the whole journey, like open mind for a lot of wisdom and continue to practice all of these principles. And it was very applicable in real life. And that's starting the whole healing journey. So all start with forgiveness.
Forgiveness. So what are some of the ways that people can forgive yourself? Because we hear that, you know, like, oh, I need to forgive myself. But how do you forgive yourself?
It's really, I think that's how I help with people to have this kind of clarity that you are not your action. Like, we are free to make our choices. We are not free from the consequences of our action. So we have to be accountable for action. It's not like we avoiding, responsibility or anything, but just because we spend a very long time making a mistake doesn't mean that we're going to spend that equal time to just, you know, pay it back.
I love that. That's a really good point. Yeah.
And I think it was terrible. I think like we all know the concept of karma and what goes around comes around. So we think that, you know, if for example, if we make a mistake, like if we steal something, you know, then something has to get stolen from us. So just like if we get into a relationship and we cheat on somebody, then we should get cheated on, and, you know, everything just going to like burn.
Yeah.
So that is a very, you know, I think that's more like a white tale, you know, like a moral lesson in like a fairy tale thing, but it's not true. It's not always true. Life is more, much more complicated and dynamic than that. And I think we very always tend to be harder on ourselves than anybody else. And there needs to be a separation of thinking that we are not a mistake. And we are allowed to change and to grow. Like, we really don't, like, we really didn't know what we know now. So we shouldn't just, like, we still have to be held accountable for our past actions. And, you know, we're making, you know, like, we deal with the consequences as they come. But then no need to further punish ourselves or go seeking out way to punish yourself.
Yeah, that's a good point. Seeking out the ways to punish yourself. Yeah, really good point. And you're right about karma. We do have kind of a fucked up view of it, especially in the United States, because we don't really get it. You know, the reverse. We've seen, you know, karma on movies and all that, but we don't get the bigger picture of what karma is or the deeper understanding of what that is. So, yes.
Yeah, I think sometimes we focus so much on karma, and it's absolutely, you know, it's true, but it's not the way we think, you know, it's not the way we think. It's not like tit for tat anything. I think sometimes we focus of getting what we deserve, that we forget about grace and forgiveness. And I think it's, you know, like the universe is not here to, you know, giving you tit for tat, you know, it's right. Here for you to learn a lot of lesson. And most of them is about love. And we forsake ourselves a lot. And if we weren't kind to ourselves, if we don't love ourselves in the true sense, we cannot love other people the way we want to. Like, if we are too hard on ourselves, we can in turn tend to be hard on our kids also. Yes. And we can give them a lot of expectation that can stifle their growth, because we didn't give them freedom to be who they truly want to be.
So the cycle just keeps going. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, and not only with our kids, but also with our employees, you know, our friends. We tend to be a little bit more forgiving with our friends. Our partners, all of that.
Everyone. So it's a good practice to have like a better, less distorted view of ourselves. So we love ourselves better, and ourselves keep changing, you know, like we are under no obligation to be the same person we are yesterday. It doesn't mean that, you know, that we have multiple personality, but it's just like we keep growing, you know, like, maybe today we learned something new that we didn't know yesterday. So we change already, and we allow to change, and it needs that kind of grace and really a lot of love and acceptance to accept who we are, so we can extend that acceptance for other people too, because they also changing.
Right.
And that's why one of the things that I said to a lot of my clients, and they all kind of like resistant to accept it, but eventually it's true, that the person that you marry is not the person that you dated. So a lot of people get miserable, like, oh, you changed. I thought you're going to be this way and you're not. And like, of course not. Everybody changed. You also changed.
Right.
So it's quite hard to, you know, because we expect things to stay the same, and we make the decision based on that. And, we forget to be flexible for reality. We just try to hold on to our view. So.
So one of the things I read on your website, and I want to get back to the meditation in a minute, but I want to take a little time out to talk about when you break up from a relationship, that being like an optimal time for personal growth.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes. So I think, drawing from my own experience, that when things are not really like, it's wrong, but it's not so wrong that we cannot stop things. So we keep going, we keep suppressing our emotion, we keep not dealing with it. So when a breakup happened, we cannot suppress it. Like the pain is so raw that it breaks us open. There's no way we can avoid and be in denial. Like if you're in a breakup, you cannot be in denial. Like, oh yeah, we're still fine. Like,
yeah, exactly.
you broke it up, you know, like, yeah. So you have no way to avoid that kind of reality. And that is like a window opportunity to actually face that, okay, there is something, you know, like not working here. There's something missing here and I really need to face it. But a lot of time, especially when we're younger, we're just like cope with it, whether with ice cream, wine or alcohol and just move on for the next one. You know, we don't really try to go down to the root, like, okay, what went wrong? Maybe that's later for a couple therapy or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
where we at order, you know, then we are too early to delve into this. But actually those at the time that the pain make us so raw and open and much more honest. So it's so much easier for us to feel and to face our feeling without being denial. Women actually very good in denial, like, that's not so bad. I mean, like, you know, there are good days. And then we would just kind of like really avoid it. So that's why the breakup or divorce is a great opportunity to grow precisely because of the pain. Because the pain is so great that we have no way to avoid it. We just have to be very open and very broad and honest. So if we use that opportunity to be honest with ourselves, we can really reconnect to what actually true to us and not what we want to be true. And that will help us more in the long run. If not, we're gonna tend to repeat the same pattern at the next relationship, even though it's different, but it's very similar to the last one. Like we keep repeating, attracting the same kind of person, kind of that. So that's usually what happened when we were young. That's why the breakup is a very ideal time, but that's why I tend to work with my clients tend to be like 30 or much later in their life. Because if you're like early teen and 20, we all have this fatal flaw of like, we think we know everything. And we just have this massive grand confidence that, yeah, we know how it works. Like there's nothing we don't know. We all heard it before. And we'd really have to fall on our ass to know.
It's so true. And the older that I get, the more I realize that I don't know anything. Here I thought
I
knew
anything.
All this stuff.
Yes.
And I don't, how does all this work again? So you're talking about a breakup, but I've also experienced this. I've had a few deaths in my life. And it seemed like that the death and the pain from the grief is actually the same thing you're talking about. It breaks you open and acts as frees you up to, you know, examine the things and then move forward from there. Yeah.
Yeah. The one thing kind of like, they both the same, they both offering both of the great opportunity for growth. For death is a little bit more sensitive because it's, first of all, you deal with a much stronger grief.
Yes.
And, second of all, I think, for me, when I kind of focus more on the relationship death, because with death, because there is kind of like a more finality because of death, the regret is so much stronger that sometimes it's hard for us to, harder to make peace with some kind of past compared to, let's say a breakup or divorce, like sure it was very bad, but at least the person is still alive.
Exactly.
And we can still wish them for happiness and stuff like that. For death, the person, if in order for me to work with them to find out their patterns, they have to have a more advanced spiritual understanding of death and impermanence. And it's harder to lift out of the regret.
Yeah. And if you already don't have that foundation of spirituality and death and what happens then on our soul on a bigger level, I could see how you would have to have that foundation first before yes. you could. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. And usually people that deal with death, I would recommend them to help with like a grief advisor first. And sometimes it takes like a more of a master, a higher level to guide them through those vulnerable times.
Exactly. Yeah,
through the vulnerable times to deal with death. Compared to a relationship death, even though it's painful, but it's more doable. So,
more doable.
Yeah. So I know my limit, you know, like, yeah. For death it's harder because there is like a perceived finality because of our human life.
Right. Now, I heard you mention talking about earning happiness. And I think I can see that all over our culture. You know, like we're going to work hard and accomplish these things and then we'll be happy. Yeah.
Yes. I think our whole culture are basically based on that. And it's not just the US. It's like global. It's around the world. Like, you know, like you gotta go to school, you gotta do homework, and you gotta work hard, you know, like everything is hard. And then in relationship, like, okay, you have to do this, you know, you have to go to like 10,000 day before you do this or whatever. So there's always seem to be a requirement for us to do something. Just as, that's why I said friendship is like the best way, but even when you think about like family, like parents and child, you think that's very, self-sacrificing, you know, like, but parents do have expectation for their children. Like you need to behave certain way, you know, mm-hmm. and then children also expect parents to do certain way. Like you need to buy me this and you need to provide me this. So there is that kind of expectation to be certain way. For friends, because, you know, because of the connection that we click with people that's similar to us, so there are less of those expectations. So there's less that kind of pressure that, okay, we have to be somebody, like we have to be somebody's expectation. It start off easier because our expectations are similar already. So we don't have that kind of pressure. So it's a good starting point to have that kind of have that pressure off and be more open before we, you know, before we know better about ourselves, you know, right. like it's better to have that kind of acceptance and love. And then we can spread it out to other relationships like our parents and children and our spouse and so more intimate relationship. Because I think the more intimate relationship we are, the higher expectation we have on that, you know?
that could very well be, yes.
Yeah, it's just like with the spouse, I'm like, why can you do this chore? You know, like I do the dishes yesterday, you gotta do the dishes today. And, you know, like the higher expectation, we just have higher expectation for people right. that we care about.
Yeah. So, but going back to the earning happiness though, it's just not true. It's not true. Yes.
No, it's not true. It's not true. And, it's very hard for us to accept that because we were raised in just a way, like we were raised that we have to be graded on performance on anything like that. So we have this kind of mindset that we have to earn and we have to do something. Just like if somebody give you a gift, it's very nice. You tend to find a way to give it back. Right. And it's like a way to earn it. But I think it takes us when we are in a vulnerable moment, when we break up or something like that, and we just have to lean on this support and we don't have anything left to give, is one of those moments that we can see the truth that you don't need to do anything to have love. You don't need to earn it. It's just there for you and you just can receive it, you know, like, you don't go and expect your children to be successful for you to love them. You know, you love them regardless. But we don't kind of think of it that way. And it's much more applicable in reality. But we just don't think about that way. We just set them like, okay, I have to do this, you know?
Right.
And we have to do this so they can, you know, so they can be proud of us. So they can, you know, so they can love us more or whatever. So
right.
So, yeah,
it's a really good point. Yeah, we don't do that to our kids, you know, at all. We love them no matter what. And yet here we find ourselves doing that to ourselves, you know?
Yes. And sometimes it takes us It really takes a lot of moment and a lot of more awareness to recognize that it's not true. Just like when our spouse is sick, you know, like we don't just suddenly stop loving them, you know, like yeah. or when something happened, we still love them, even though they cannot do anything to help us anymore, or right. they cannot share the load or whatever. We still love them. So is it exactly in those moments that we can see the truth of like, you do not need to earn love. You can you be loved just because you are the way you are, just because.
I like that. Okay, so going back then to the meditation, I know I got a little bit off track there, but so we started with the self-forgiveness, and then you discovered this fabulous meditation teacher at the exact right time. And so how has meditation then shifted? Because to me, that was really the big turning point. And one of the big turning points in my life was meditation and how that, you know, changes you in so many ways.
Meditation is a great tool to develop awareness and maintain it. And without awareness, there can be no personal growth, because we're not aware that we have an issue. We can't even think of a solution to kind of solve it. So the meditation, yes, first he taught me about meditation, and it's built greater foundation for self-awareness. But then he go also on, you know, teach about Buddhist principle, about impermanence, about interdependence and everything. And all of that are very applicable to the life. And we just don't think about it. We just don't. And it's not something like, you know, that you go to grocery, you're like, oh yeah, everything is impermanent. Like we don't really think about it. And because I have that teacher, so he can tell me this thing so I can think about it and I can contemplate and try to integrate it into my life. And because of my, because I have a teacher and then I have such respect for him that even though at a certain point I don't understand why I have to do this, but I still incorporate it in my life because, you know, I trust him. So there's a level of trust. And there's a level of, I guess, like devotions, and it's really helps. Like not only is increase the awareness, but eventually I can see the wisdom if I, you know, do the practice and stuff like that. And I think it's the same with anything in your when you restudy. You know, like we don't go to the chemistry class and then questioning the teacher. Well, you don't know what you're talking about. You know,
right.
There's a certain kind of trust. Like, okay, they know what they're talking about. We just kind of accept it at a certain point until we understand it. And it would just basically, it's like open my mind to see a lot of things. So sometimes people don't do well with meditations, but it's always good to have mindfulness. So if they don't meditate, they can do any kind of activity to help with mindfulness. Like a lot of my clients do journal. So is any practice that can increase awareness, that is essential for any kind of your inner journey, is essential. Without awareness, you cannot go anywhere.
It's okay. Yeah. Pace. So awareness is like the key thing here then.
It's the key thing.
Yes.
And meditation is my path for the awareness. But other people can have any path as long as you can increase the awareness. And usually that means mindfulness. You just have a mindful practice.
Yeah. Well, what are some of the like day-to-day ways then that people could increase their mindfulness, their awareness, just easy practices that we could all incorporate?
So mindfulness is a buzzword, but basically mean that you, when you do something, you just have to be aware that you're doing it. So, so let's say my practice is meditation, but other people do, when they're walking, they enjoy the walking, like it's pull them to the present much more. So any activity that make them more present. Some people like doing dishes. Some people have this kind of mindful moment when they're in the shower, when they would just you know, like just relax and then just feel the water for a minute instead of going through that to-do list or like, I need to do all of this.
Yeah, so, shave here, wash here. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like any activity that, first of all, like either put you in like the present or make you in the flow. And that will increase it. Sometimes it's easier for people to find activity that put them in the flow. Sometimes like an exercise, physical activity, sometimes a journal writing, sometimes it's dancing. So those in the flow is like a good starting practice. You're not really truly in the present, but you're kind of in the flow, but you're not like, you know, in the past or the future. So that is a good starting point. But eventually there needs to be a mindfulness practice. So usually that you have to aware of what you're doing. So that way you can recognize that you're doing it when you're saying things, because you're feeling things. So that's basically it. As long as we kind of be aware of it. And it doesn't have to be long. Like a lot of my clients came to me when they have zero experience with mindfulness. So I give them some practice like, okay, you need to do, let's say, 3 minutes a day. Can you do 3 minutes a day? Yes. Like, you know, like you can squeeze 3 minutes a day, you know, like you can do it when you go to the bathroom for fuck's sake, you know, like 3 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I think then, because I have the built-in things, one of them is going to the bathroom, you know, one of them is getting into my car, coming into my home, you know, certain moments throughout the day. The funny thing is I was talking with a girlfriend this past week about driving. And how we, and I'm the first one to admit that I do this, I'll get somewhere and I won't even remember driving there. So of all the things you should be paying attention to, you know, you would think it would be driving, but we do mindlessly go through a big part of our lives.
Yes. And that exactly is. As long as we do an activity that not mindlessly, you know, that if we aware of what we're doing thing, that's the whole practice.
Yeah.
That's all practice.
That's it yeah. right there. Yeah. Well, some really great things here, Tiffany. And you can find out more about Tiffany on her super cool website. I love the address of this, spunkyspiritualist.com. It's perfect. I wish I would have thought of that. Darn it. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, or joining me today. There's some really good tips in here. Once that self-forgiveness was really stood out for me. You know, that being kind of the starting place and to just lighten up on yourself.
Yes.
So, yes.
It's the start for me. And I hope it can be the start for everybody to truly understand that it's okay to let go of that mistake. And it's starting on the new life, new chapter.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us today. And we'll talk to you again next time, everyone.
Thank you, Renee.